pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. Our guest today is Joseph Babu, who serves as the dynamic CMO and growth driver at Reify Technologies, one of the world's largest AI app studios based in Kochi, India. Reify has amassed over 75 million global users across 23 languages. He is skilled at strategically positioning brands and accelerating viral growth through disruptive zero marketing tactics. Joseph pioneered Reify's viral acquisition strategy, which organically garnered millions of users without any advertisement spending. An esteemed thought leader in marketing innovation, Joseph was awarded Thai Kerala's Best Entrepreneur in 2021. He is a sought-after speaker on digital transformation, culture building, and purpose-led business. Joseph played an instrumental role in Reify's meteoric rise, growing their flagship cooking app, Cookbook Recipes, into India's number one in its category. He led Reify to become India's sole premium partner for Google Cloud's generative AI. With experience visiting numerous countries across five continents, Joseph brings a global perspective. He is passionate about leveraging partnerships and technology to uplift people worldwide. Joseph believes in creating win-win relationships and close-knit teams. Fueled by curiosity to drive change, Joseph is often found exploring diverse cultures on international expeditions. He is envisioning the next decade steering Reify's AI systems to assist people and society. Joseph aspires to inspire future leaders in purpose-driven business. Currently, he is spearheading Reify's highly advanced generative AI platform, R10, to revolutionize enterprise AI adoption. Joseph, after the conference talk, the Kettle conference talk of yours, I was completely floored with the authenticity that you brought to the table. Skeptical about AI, I was really touched with the human element. I'm really honored that you agreed to be on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Rashmi. The pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
Now, before we find out who Joseph is in the AI world, I want to know what little Joseph was like and your journey to reach where you have today.
Yes. From the times where when I have this memory, I was, from what I heard from my mom also, is that I was a very curious child. That curiosity grown along with me. During the schooling time, I think I was that person who always loved to have fun, who always being around with friends to always to have a good time. And everything and anything about sports and games, I loved. I was not so bad at studies. I have a way to crack exams. I think that is the best way to put it. I was not the smartest in the class, but I know how to crack exams. And thankfully, I was the topper for the 10th exams. Wow. So again, not because I was so smart, because I know a way to crack exams. So from till 10th, it was more like with friends, sports and all. And it continued when I moved to my plus one, plus two, where I met my friends with whom I started my company. So post, so it was going to my plus one, plus two school was really interesting because the kind of peer group that I had was really talented. So if I could quote an example, if today, like after half an hour, if we have a program in the school, these people were so smart that they can organize it like they were planning it for more than 1 month. So that is the kind of improvisation, or I would say the kind of energy these people had, and it had a very good impact on me. And even the teachers that we had, they were the ones who trained the students for all sort of activities and things, and the energy that they had. I did my till 10th in Anita Vidyalaya school in Kaledi, which is the Sri Shankara, the birthplace of Sri
Shankaracharya.
Yes. Then I did my plus two in Vishwajyothi CMI Public School, which is in Angamali.
Okay.
Then I took like any other, I would say, student during that time, it would be either engineering or doctor. So engineering had this wide doors opened of doing anything after doing engineering. So that was the reason to take engineering, not because of the passion towards engineering. What was passion was like we see in the Hollywood movies or in the Bollywood movies. Like the young people go to the college, they'll have dance and fun. That was my imagination about the college. It was not the same. I did my college in Rajagiri Engineering College. But one thing that was really good was, of course, the people there, and also in a job perspective, they had very good placements. So what happened was, by the time that I got out of the college, I had multiple placements. So this is my side of story. But in between the college itself, the seed of the artificial intelligence started from the college time. So my friends who I met during my plus one, plus two, so these people were in another college and I used to meet them quite often. So they had this idea of starting this one college quiz for one of their college competitions, inter-college competition. So basically, this quiz is basically like you can see a question on the screen and you have to give an answer.
Yeah.
So once you give a wrong answer, what happens is that again you have to try. So being the creators of this quiz, my friends, they wanted to make it to the next level. So they were thinking how they can do that. They were having a nice biryani at midnight and thinking about that. And that's how one of our friends put this idea that, why don't you make this quiz talk back? So we found that is interesting. So it is. So what do you think? So we were asking him, what do you think about this? So can you elaborate a bit? So he was saying, like a teacher, why don't this quiz can give insight if someone is giving a wrong answer? So that was quite a nice idea. So if we evolve that quiz and becomes a relational intelligence system where it can find relation between two things. So for example, like if the question is, who is the ODI cricket player who have scored most number of runs in ODIs for India, if someone's giving the answer that is Sourav Ganguly, the quiz will talk back and say, no, it's not Sourav Ganguly, but they used to open the batting together for India. So the answer is actually Sachin, but the system is giving the relation between Sachin and Sourav. It become a relationship engine, then it could find relation between multiple entities. So there were very interesting examples that people tried. So right after the college, what we did was we go for patent for this particular technology. And that was the next moment at which we realized that this is a technology. What we have is something that is at par with what Apple, Google, and Microsoft is having. So there is something called a prior art search that IP firms will do while we file for an IP. That which all companies have a similar tech. So that's how we came to know that this is something worthwhile pursuing. So we decided not to take up any jobs. We started the company. So that's how ReaFi took into place. And that's when we started our journey together and also the AI journey.
Oh my God. But you know, when it comes to AI, it's in the last few years. In fact, the last couple of years that everybody's talking about it. You seem to have got into this field much before the world woke up to it, especially in this side of the subcontinent, where people started talking AI in everyday language terms. So when you knew you hit it right, of course, by default, you got it right. Looking back at your journey now, Joseph, from you seem to be absolutely humbled by saying that you cracked every exam because you knew how to crack it, and you topped the 10th exam, not because you were intelligent, but you knew how to crack it. Was there something in you intuitively that always helped you take the right move?
It's quite a tricky question because when I think about it, so this is what I have introspected about the same, what was the right thing which I did. So when it happens in a sequence of events, you might not know the dots is going to get connected. But when you look back, you can see the dots were getting connected. So I think that is the thrill about living life. So that's what I think. Because it's not like a pre-planned kind of a thing, right? So people that who know me from my childhood, so they might thought that I would become a politician because my grandfather was a politician, my dad is a politician. Then some of my teachers thought that I might pursue something like civil service, which again, I honestly don't think I could crack it, but these were the expectations. And I took an entirely different path of entrepreneurship, which I have no clue about doing because I'm a first generation entrepreneur. What I loved about doing this is I knew that I might not continue to be a software engineer or an electrical engineer, but I know that I love to work with my friends. So friendship was one foundation that I mean, drived me to start this company. So that is one thing. And I was passionate about new things because per se I was not a very sound technological guy, but rest of my teammates were, but I was so curious to listen to them. And my role was more in the initial stages of what they're building. I used to test it and see whether is it useful or how it can be used. So that is what I can think of, like, and I think so there are some I would say there are some genetical things also because being from a political background, there is some sort of kind of a leadership skills which I would have, which I think I could not deny that because that would be very it's I don't think it is very humble to do that.
Yeah, I think you can confidently say
lack of
it.
gratitude of saying that thanks to the genetics, but I would say that how it helped, how other founders saw it is, you know, for we were six co-founders who started the company, of which four of them have very strong technical background, and two of us are non-technical. So myself and the CFO are the non-technical people. So CFO here, he's good in maths, so he obviously chose that finance is something that he can do. Because I'm talking about just when we started the company, because we are not MBA graduates. We have just done the engineering. We don't know how to run a business. Only, I would say, the initial capital that we have was this friendship and the passion. This was just two things. So then, who would do the marketing? Who would do the sales? This role automatically came to me. It was not, I didn't choose it. It just came to me because it was, that's what last left in the plate to take. But I'm so glad that, so when you don't have any background of or any learning of how to do certain things, you purely try to invent your own ways and it might become an innovation. So what I know is in the initial stages when we created products, the responsibility of marketing it to people was it was primarily my responsibility. So what I was thinking is we haven't raised any money. So is there any way to market without any money? So that was my first thought. Second thing is what I can make use so that I can market our products. So when I think about it, we have a very strong technology team. So why don't we use technology to market it? So this is how I happened to invent the zero marketing strategy, where without spending any penny acquiring users, Thankfully, it worked. We have 75 million users across the globe, in 157 countries. So everything done in a small room in Kochi, and thanks to the technology and also a lot of things aligned to make this happen. And I would say almost 99% of all these users are organic. I mean, people discovered our product and they used our product. So,
Okay. This is fascinating, Joseph. 75 million users, 157 countries, all sitting from a room in Kochi and working your way through. And that to zero marketing fees, what you're saying. When you're talking about all of this, you are talking about AI at a time when AI was not the norm, was not something everybody was familiar with. How did you get the market to know about it?
It was not so easy. So AI was much of a fancy word at that point of time. Maybe in some of the sci-fi movies, you could see AI. And usually AI is the villain. And in most of the stories. So when we, so right after that, filing for the patent, when we knew that we have something valuable. So we tried to talk about this AI and what all things is possible using this. Maybe people would have related it like a story of a movie. So it's good to hear, but not so, I would say, compelling to believe.
Yes. So
when we continue to talk about this, once we met one of our mentors, I would say, who worked in the Valley and all. So he gave this advice that, maybe you have a powerful technology, but unless you use this technology in something useful and make people experience the same, the magic of the technology, then only people start believing it. Otherwise, technology, so it made a lot of sense even then, and it make even more sense now. So because the science is something that was there for a pretty long time from the people were know about stars and astrology, everything was there. But in the, I mean, the 17th and the 15th centuries, when the technology was being used, I mean, from the science, when people derived technology and used that technology in the business, then is what the scientific revolution happened. People started to pour in money because they need more scientific evolution to happen so that technology will develop, so that business will thrive. So it made a lot of sense for us during that time. So we wanted to use this technology in some form or shape so that people can use it. So talking about only theory can take you so far, like in the Oppenheimer movie, what he says, theory can only take you so far. So we realized that in the early part of the journey. So then what we did was we went back to the drawing board. We thought of like how, what is the kind of product that we can make use of using this technology. So that's how we started our, I mean, the mobile app business, where we created apps by using our AI technology and put it in the marketplace like Google Play Store and App Store. And users started using it. So, and we never talked about AI after that. So, because ultimately when it comes to a business, if a user, when we launch a product, it would be for a certain segment of users. They use, if they find value, then only the product makes sense, even if you use rocket science in that. Okay. So we truly understood in the beginning stage itself. So we didn't say that we are using any of these technologies. We created the product so that we focused on the user experience part, use technology to improve that user experience. And it was like a 7 years journey. And within 2 years, the first app that we launched, which is the cookbook recipes, became India's largest recipe app. Now it's the second largest in the world. So that journey was, I think, which was a core focus on customer experience. And in order to create that customer experience, you leverage technology, but we didn't talk about it. And started talking about AI once the pandemic hit, where the world was also ready to accept this digital transformation, where everyone wanted technology to bring whatever services to their doorstep, that, rather than going to maybe to a bank or to a healthcare service or whatever that is. So that is when we knew that the world is ready, that this kind of technology can be talked about. And that is when we got our first B2B client also. So that was the journey. Initially, it was, I would say, it was tough to talk about AI. So what we did was very simple. We stopped talking about it.
This is so contrary to what marketing says. According to marketing parlance, you have to be visible, you have to talk about it. Only then people know you're there in the market. And here you say, we stopped talking about it, and that's how it worked. But when you're giving this entire journey so far, Joseph, what is interesting is the fact that you tried at a very organic level with individuals and then started spreading the word by itself rather than you trying very hard. It was difficult, yes, but you believed. What held you all together? What held you all together? Because it was a tough journey at that point of time, but what held the six of you together?
I think when I look back, I think the best thing that happened was the team that we had, the six founders. If I say the journey, initially for the first 3 to 4 years, it was just six of us and one employee. And thankfully, the founding team that we had are the entire skills to run a company. I mean, I won't say that we are experts in that, but in order to so to create considering our business, so when you create a mobile app, you want the front end designs, you want the back end, you want it to be placed on the store. There is a marketing, there is a finance that need to happen. There is a customer success, there is a content side. So everything is managed by six of us. And for the content management side, only we hired one person. So as we had that this entire skills within the team, we were so comfortable with each other, right? So this comfort was the one thing that keep us driving for the initial years, right? And definitely we are friends, so we know each other. We know the other one's weakness, strength. So it was really easy for us to play along. I mean, it made a very good team. And once we had challenges, definitely this journey have challenges. Once we had this revenue dips, and there was a phase in during the journey, and at that time it was more profound of being there for each other. So before, when someone in my team, I mean the founding team, and someone start talking, I know what is about to talk. That is the kind of connection. And when someone says something, we know why he's saying it. So this understanding was one thing that connected the bond between six of us. And this bond is what thrived us in the 10 years. So I am very proud to say that we know we have a lot of contemporaries who started during the same time. But I don't think that none of the founders have the same founding team right now. Maybe they have a scale to other companies, or them have split it. So because of many reasons, but this is something that I say with so much of pride that we stay together. And that is, that friendship was one thing which built the foundation. I think that word kept us strong together. And just to answer, mention about the previous notion that I stopped just talking about AI. We never stopped talking about our product. We just stopped talking that it is AI that powered this product, but we talked all over the media, all over the, so I think Cookbook was the first product from India to be showcased on Google I/O in 2015. So the marketing was going so active, but the AI part of it was the only thing that we kept silent, because people could not get the why AI, or AI was not a topic that was off discussion at that point of time. And it's smart to do the marketing. Once you have a wave, you have to ride it. So you to create a wave, it requires more resources, right? So that was a, I think when I look back, I think it was a wise decision that was made.
And curiosity prompting this question out. You chose Cookbook because it has universal appeal. Food is something that everybody needs access to and would love to try new things. Is that the reason why you started with something like Cookbook?
Yes, I think that was the major reason to start with. To putting up the real story, we actually launched a first product, which was technically very sound. Again, sound very AI-centric kind of a product. This product was basically known as Movie Tarot. It basically predicts the box office collection of a movie before it releases. Also, it predicts the happiness of the movie. And we thought it was very cool kind of an AI product because no one could predict the movie's happiness at that point of time. Only we know the reviews, which is very subjective and personal.
Yeah.
But it didn't work in the market. It was another learning at the early stage that we should launch something that the market needs or the people need. Then we look back, what is people are looking right now in terms of a product? Then we found as a category, health and fitness is one category that is booming back in 2013, especially in the Google Play Store and App Store. So this was the analytical part of it. The second part of it is there is one cookery show that has been running since 90s in the Kairali channel, which is one of the channels. And I have seen my mom watching all the cookery shows at home, even though she's not very enthusiastic about making the dish, but she likes to see it. So I have even I also sit along with her. So there is something with cooking. So cooking is more like not just for the taste buds, but it is more like a passion kind of a thing. Like you learn a guitar. So cooking has that thing. So that is one reason. One primary reason we started with cooking. So when we started, what we were thinking was we don't want it to be very restricted to. So this is one fundamental ideology that we had. Even when we started with AI, we wanted AI to break that all barriers of economical, social, and language divide. So when we started itself, we launched in all major global languages. So even in Spanish, even in Italian. So when those people take our app, they feel like it is their homemade app. So going global and making it local was our mantra when we started. So then I came to know that this was the apart from English, there was a 50% market for the other languages which we tapped in. So this was something that we, apart from choosing the cookbook as an app, health and fitness sector was one reason. The passion for cooking, the demand for cooking was one reason. And none of us cook during that time. None of the founders would cook. Then later we came to know that we need to know what is the actual problems of someone who cooks using this app. Then we tried to do this user testing, get the feedbacks, try to sit and read the entire reviews that people writing, try to solve it using technically. Southeast Asian market, there is something very unique that during that time, the smartphone revolution was just happening. So there is a voice storage limitation. So people would have a messaging app, people would have a email app. Apart from the fundamental apps, people want to keep a cooking app that has to be that compelling, right? So that was one problem. The first problem was basically how people would keep your app in their phone when the memory is so low. So it has to be that compelling. The second one was to use this app, you need internet, right? So when you go to kitchen to cook, because that's where you cook, if you are using your Wi-Fi might not have range in the kitchen, right? So will it be possible to access the recipes offline? So similarly, then I can quote many examples which we learned because we don't know cooking. We try to sit and read what people are saying, what is their problems, and try to solve the same within the app. So this is how we approached it. So we were a bunch of people who don't cook, but who love to eat. I would say narrowed down to this cookbook basically because of the market research and the demand for the cooking apps. And starting was just only one thing. Starting the cookbook was just one thing because initially it was a simple app where there are certain categories. You can click open, you can see the recipes, ingredients, and you can cook. Then it becomes an entirely different app where you can see what is there in your fridge and you can get recipes for that. And you can get the shopping list while you go for shopping. All the problems related to cooking, from thinking of cooking to planning and actual cooking. We have a cooking mode also without using hand or anything. You can just say and move your ingredient things and steps and all.
Okay.
So this is how we started cooking and how we progressed about it.
Okay. And the languages that you chose in which they could be understood, was again based on the population and the most spoken languages. Is that how
Yes.
you divided that? Okay,
Yes.
the translation will happen that way.
Right. So we initially started with that only because when you are a startup or a small team, you have to carefully handle your resources.
Yeah.
So because there would be one language that would be used by a small number of users.
Yeah.
Engineering effort to build that would be much, much more. So to create, if your impact is on your centerpiece, what is the kind of work that make a maximum impact? So we started with Spanish, Italian, because those were the languages in which most number of Android phones were sold. So what was the criteria for us to choose the languages?
Oh.
So because it made immediate impact.
Yeah. Very smart. And this is where I think you beat the rest of the world in order to make sure that your grounding was very strong, your presence very visible in a space that the pandemic created for all of us to get into digital world. And there you were already when the world was getting into the groove, phones became smarter. And suddenly you found yourself very, very relevant to the world and the language that the world was speaking. So was it a very easy, soft launch for you when you got into AI formally and announced it to the world? Was it something very matter of fact, easy, and you had already arrived by then?
There were easy parts of it and there were hard parts of it. I tried to segregate both. The easy part was being started with AI, the head start that we had in since 2013. I just not the idea of or the technology, just the technology. This technology was validated by 75 million users. So when the even the when an AI system is being used by users and when we have data and fine-tuning is happening to the system, it becomes more valuable because the real user data is being coming. So what essentially happened in the journey till the pandemic was we were creating that cleanest data repository, which can be used for fine-tuning this AI models that we can hear right now, the foundational models that we are talking about. This can be fine-tuned only using clean data. So the problem that we solved was when you go to any, say, when you do the B2B business. So that is the challenging part. So still, till then we were doing the B2C business. We were creating our products. It was used by customers across the world. Now we are creating products for the enterprises and companies and for their customers. So when you sell it to the enterprises, the kind of problems was different. So that was the challenging part. So for any AI companies who are working on the B2B side, for any given use case, to create value for the client, it has to be fine-tuned for the client's specific use cases. And if you take a bank, there is a way in which one bank does their business. So that business logic also has to come in. And also this AI system has to connect with the real world systems, like maybe if a bank is providing loans, their loan providing system has to be connected with AI so that it provides value. So for doing all of this, it needs data. So if you go and try to get the bank data, it is very much regulated. It's a regulated industry. So you cannot, the bank cannot give the customer data to a third party. And in various forms and shapes, even though the regulations is different in different industries, it is very difficult for any companies to share their first party customer data to any third party. So because data is the new oil, that world knows it. That is how people going to say get more value in terms from the customer. So we have entirely cut that dependency because our approach is different. So we fine tune for any use case using our own proprietary data. So that makes the entire AI implementation faster. So we can do an AI use case for an enterprise within a time period of 4 weeks, which is a stellar fast time period, which none of the companies would believe at first. So that is the advantage or the easy part of it. As we have already have the one of the largest, cleanest data repository, we could fine tune for any AI use cases. Second thing was definitely the speed in which we can execute, which gives us an advantage. The third thing is the thing that you started, the ethical foundation. So this is one very critical thing. We, even though being in this AI space for a very long time, we know what all things that AI can do. So to talk about the challenging part or the alarming part of it is, it is even more lethal than the atom bomb or the nuclear energy. So it is always on the humans who use these tools. So similarly, I would say rather than the tools, this technology. So how AI is trained is very critical when you use it for any use cases. So we have trained all our AI models with a very strong ethical guardrail so that it won't go wrong at any point of time. Because AI, if you think of AI, I always take this analogy, like easiest way to understand, if you can define human as intelligence on a carbon-based body, you can define AI as intelligence on a silicon-based body, both having intelligence. So this intelligence, how the AI evolution happened was it tried to mimic the working of a brain. It will connect things, learn things, it can share knowledge. So all these capabilities are there for this new generative AI kind of wave that is happening, or the technology that is happening. So it is too critical. Like you train or grow a child, it's very important to how you train your AI model. So being ethically guarded or creating a responsible AI is also something that we really worked, and we know that, so that for any given use case, it will be grounded, it will be anchored to the source of truth. So these were the advantages that we had: the data, the speed in which we can execute, the ethical guardrails. And already we have well-versed in global languages. It is, all our AI systems are multilingual and it can connect to all platforms. So wherever users are there, we can connect and converse there. The challenging part was the B2B business dynamics, because we have never done the B2B business. So what work in B2B business is trust. So any big banks, in order to get a small, I would say, compared to the other vendors that they work with, a small company like us, to first we have to build that trust. So the trust building was a process that took time. And definitely we had no previous experience in banking. So this question, any reasonable people would ask this question. So our response was, we have no limitations because of that. The same reason, like when we started marketing, like I said, when I did marketing, I have no previous experience of how it has to be done. So I can do anything. So the same thing is what we were putting it forward. So we do anything in our capacity to make your client's interest to happen. I mean, whatever that they want in the product, we can make sure that it can happen. And because even our first client, which is Federal Bank, I'm very thankful to the leadership, because they trusted us. And they said that there were 30 vendors they evaluated, including all the giants. So none of them could show exactly what they needed. We could show that. So that is why they started to believe us. And even now we follow the same strategy. When we go to a client, we exactly show them what they want to see. Because being from, I would say, Kerala, especially from a place near, there is a place called Malayattur, which is very near to my place. It's the place of St. Thomas. So St. Thomas is that guy who only, who didn't even believe Jesus when he came back from the dead. He wanted to touch his hand and then only he believed. So being from that place, we know that anyone can claim things, but showing it and actually making it work is what it takes for the client to believe. So we choose that route. So that was something that we learned over the journey. On the B2B side, that was a bit hard, but the B2B business dynamics is something that even now we are continue to learn. But we definitely had this advantage of starting early on the AI side.
Yeah, true, very true. And like you said, the ethical part of it is what really floored me, and the importance of it, because there are a lot of things happening in the cyber world today, and a lot of crimes which are attributed to AI. So many people are kind of scared to get into that space because they are not sure what of their knowledge and their information would be taken away from them, and the security elements are questionable. So when it comes to AI, let's start with something as simple as ChatGPT. So that is, I know, a very small aspect of AI, but the way the answers come out is something which is important for us to understand, that the way you question is how the answer is framed. So for that prompt, you need the human intelligence to intervene to give the right prompt to get the answer as per your need. So having been in that space for so long now, Joseph, where do you think man still is one up over AI? Because everyone around is kind of scared whether AI will take over at some point. And you are holding ethics as one of your biggest pillars. So keeping ethics and the takeover of AI at some point, if we allow it to go the way it is, where do you think the human being can intervene?
It's actually a very relevant question. It is being on almost all AI debates. This question has been coming. So at this point of time, at least the time at which we are talking at present, it's still very much in the control of humans. Like, it's very much in the control of the humans when I say that it is fundamentally how a human is using this AI, for what all applications that we are using it for. So like I mentioned at the beginning, so as you have brought in the example of ChatGPT, because that was the one thing that created the revolution of the generative AI. There were a lot of tools there in Google got in, there was Palm 2, there was Bard, there was Gemini that came in. Even the open source have a lot of LLMs. Even now Apple is going to launch. So all the major tech companies are there. So we know that it is very important, or this is something is going to change. That is the next revolution that is going to happen. But where the relevance of human is basically, especially the creators, the nation builders. So each of these stakeholders have a big role to play in this entire, because it is a paradigm shift that is happening. So if you see internet times, so from the paper, everything moving to internet, then to smartphones, then now it's moving to AI. So what happens with the AI thing is, now we are dealing with intelligence also. So so when you deal with intelligence, I don't want to add to the complexity of the entire thing, but just to give it to a perspective, the ChatGPT model that launched in, say, 2023, during that time, beginning, it has an IQ which is around 150 to 160, which is smarter than 99.9% of humans. And after 3 months, they launched something called GPT-4, which is the foundational LLM that powers ChatGPT, which has got 1,600 as its IQ, which is 10 times more than human. So you can imagine in the next 5 years, what is the kind of IQ this intelligence system has. Even human can understand what, cohesively to understand what the system is saying, or what are the intentions in which it is saying. So all these things are questioned. So that is why it is important for us to create the ethical frameworks for responsible AI at present. I mean, which all applications we are using AI. And the second part to it again is the, when I say ethical AI, it is a very vast topic, the responsible AI. So one thing definitely any AI system should need is the explainability. If it is giving an answer, why it is giving, what is the thought process? So this is something that we need to know, because the biggest challenge with most of the AI system is we, the humans, don't know when it hallucinates, because it can give information which is not real or true with a lot of, say, conviction to make people think that it is correct. So explainability for any AI system is very important. Then the ethical AI framework, when I talk about that, the security aspect, the accountability aspect, all these things have to be in play, because it is more important, because AI being, we have to see AI as a very powerful kind of a technology, and it can be used on all side of things. Like if you are using it for, say, nuclear wars, for example. So it can be used more effective than any of the existing tools. So when two nations try to use AI for their national interest, which is against some other country, what this AI learn is entirely different. So this is the importance of the framework. And when an AI system learns something like this, when it's connected to internet, it can close learn this things also. I mean, humans, this is one capability that Homo sapiens made it through compared to the Neanderthals, right? So we to share the knowledge, to have that cognitive capabilities and to gather together. So to share information is, they can do it just like this. So at present, again, coming back to the first point, it is up to the humans on how they are using it. And when it is used in its full potential, there can be a lot of transformations, especially in the job scenarios, because a lot of jobs is getting replaced with new jobs. I won't say that the jobs will be, there won't be any jobs for humans, because it's always up to humans on how to use these systems. And all the application level things is supposed to be, at least in our thought process, what we think it should make human work better and faster or smarter is the way in which we think of AI tools. So it is always for human, because we had computers, then we got smartphone, which is a smarter gadget. Now we have AI, which is even smarter. So it has to empower us as humans. It should not be the other way. So because being a powerful technology, what can happen is there can be a lot of job shifts in a very small span of time, which hasn't been seen ever in the history. So the economy also has to be equipped for the same, how this transition can happen. So there have been a lot of AI bills is going on to impose more tax on the AI kind of use cases. It's primarily because to slow down this thing so that people can adapt. But there's no going back from AI, because that is what history have told us. When a new technology comes in, it is a necessary evolution. It's what is more important is how we are going to handle with ethical frameworks. And every company should have, even if they are not an AI company, if they are adopting an AI technology, there should be a basic framework and should pass through that so that it is used for good. So these are the generic thoughts that we have, at least for any use cases that we take, we try to do this validation. And while fine tuning or create the model also, we keep that in the center.
I really hope, wish and pray that everyone who's using AI remembers this, because the more you stress on ethics and the more you're doing it every time, it's there all over your website as well. When it comes to Reify, you set out with a mission. Today, when you're looking back, has your mission actually been accomplished? Are you still on the path of greater accomplishments? Where are you on that journey? As per plan?
We are just starting. I think the first decade was more on, it was a story of perseverance, because what AI could do, we haven't done much, I would say, in the first decade, because it is the time of prep, because world was not ready to use AI in its full potential and throttle. But now the world is ready. They know what AI is capable of. So I think now it's this decade is where we believe that Reify has a lot more role to play, especially on the AI side, because not to give up and be sticking to that journey was the key part in the first decade for us. Because it took us almost 10 years, even though we had the technology, it has evolved, we are doing business, but now the world is ready to, because even when we started the company, the story that we used to say is that if I am thinking of something, the technology should be able to bring it. That is the magic of technology. Because if you remember, I quoted this, because the word Reify is an anagram of fairy. And why fairies? Fairy is one thing that comes and do magic for you, right? So we believe the technology can create magic, but the true potential of magic is unlocked now. So we are expecting to create more magic. So that is the dream that we had. Now we can create that dream. So in this decade. So that's how I see it.
Okay, this is actually very beautiful. But another thing that I'm very curious about is, in this dream of Reify, what are some of those milestones that you are really proud of and you know you're going the right direction? Because every one of us who sets out on a journey has certain milestones we set to be reached, to know we are on the right path. So right. What are some of those milestone moments for you as a company, I love the fact that it's very inverted, reified. Yeah, so what are some of those milestones that you would be really looking back with pride?
Yes, so since we started the company, the first major aha moment for us was being the first company from India to be showcased on Google I/O. So it is one of the largest tech conference hosted by Google. So it was in San Francisco. Two of our founders got invited, and it was the proudest moment for us because Google I/O was one event that we used to watch in college at night to see what is the new tech thing is being launched. So we created a product, and that is being showcased on that stage within 2 years after the college. It was a dream come true moment for us. And since then, for every 5 years, Google have showcased one or other products. Again, we continue to do that success consistently. Otherwise, it is like a one-off thing, like being there for one time. And in 2019, the Google team flew in and created a story of ReFi. And so that was the B2B journey. And one thing that I am very proud of is, so we have gone through that valley of death, I would say, where our revenue started drooping. From there, we restarted our journey in 2018. So again, when I look back, when you talk to experienced founders who have being an entrepreneur, they say that the entrepreneurial graph is just like a sine wave. It is not like always going like a flat curve. There will be ups and downs, but you make sure that this sine wave is going up, right? So this is something exactly how the journey was. The other key milestone was for us was last year, we were invited to talk about responsible AI in the Google Cloud conference in US. We were the only founders from India to be invited for that. So I think that is a testimony for the work that we have been doing for the last 10 years. It was a proud moment for us. So our CEO, Mr. John Matthew, was there to talk about the same. And when we look back, the 75 million users that we have in the B2C side who are still using our product. And the one story which I could recall is, I think it happened in 2013, that when we launched in Portuguese language, there is a Brazilian girl who sent a review saying that she baked a birthday cake for her mom and she loved it. Thank you, cookbook. So we know that we could not touch people's lives who are so far in the other part of the continent. So these are the moments that I can think of. And in terms of milestones, right now we are the only generative AI partner of Google Cloud in India. So it was quite a big achievement for us. And going forward, we are seeing to grow our business. So right now, when I think of, so people used to say that if your company was not in Kochi, if it was in Valley, the kind of money that you have made is huge. So we want that also to be rectified in the next decade. Hopefully, in terms of economically or financially also, we want to see a big success. So this is something that I wish for.
Amen to that. And in spite of all these successes, Joseph, what really touched me in your talk was the part where you spoke about how you work 4 days a week and your wives are equal partners. Now, how did you keep your relationships so closely knit, personally and professionally, and make sure you have the true balance that people wish for and hope for?
So every company will have a culture, right? So culture is not something that you can say speak or you can I would say impose. It has to be created. So for us, we were not very sure that what is the kind of company culture that we need to create, but being a company that started with six friends, it automatically have a close knit of a family vibe. So even our initial hire was another group of people who were working together. So that was our second line of people. So whenever we hire, we do that cultural fit and we try to make sure that the kind of we so we want company to be that happy place that everyday people come and work. Because otherwise, if it is a place where you come and do your task and go, that is not a place that you look forward on every day to come. So we want our workplace to be happy. So we created a lot of activities and things around the company to make sure that this is happening. So in 2019, we announced our Moonshot protocol, It was basically a thought process of doing 10x better in everything what that we do. So that was one thing. Then we launched the Spark Friday as a part of, again, making four-day work weeks, and Friday is the day for innovation where all our company members comes in, we play games, we try to build some things, we eat together, and then we go, maybe some of the group will go out for playing, some will go for movies. So we wanted that, if that is the culture that we want to we want to live and we want to spread. So that it automatically shaped, and we try to create things within the our daily or weekly operation so that this culture is being grown. So and especially the second part of about the wives, like every one of us got married once we started the company, they also become part of the company. Even though they are working in different things, they also indulge in that. For all the celebrations, they would come, and they gave that female perspective for us, because six of us being men, we might not know what a women employee would be thinking. So there were some of the Women's Day, they were talking with all these people and try to understand and try to fix if there is anything that need to be done. So they were helping in those things. So it primarily driven, and we consciously try to have more female, employees within the company so that the culture is more balanced. Because we, at the core, we think that we are a very strong feminist people. So, so that's it about the culture part. It was more like Riafai. We say that Riafai is family because that's how it got nurtured.
Yeah. Okay. So here we are at this point in the conversation where I want you to take a couple of steps back into the pandemic. What are your takeaways from the pandemic?
So nothing is permanent. Life is something that you have to, is the greatest thing. Rest, everything can take a seat back and you can slow down. And even a smallest worm can create that insightful thought within you and make you introspect about what matters. So that was the three key takeaways. Yeah.
And three life lessons, Joseph, that you'd like to leave us with around whatever you have seen.
I think one is whatever that you're doing, do it in the best way. However small thing that you are doing, try to do it in a way in which you leave a signature. So that is one life lesson that I have. The second thing is, it is more important about knowing than the knowledge, the art of knowing, the perspectives. So it has to continuously grow and keep learning. So because that is how the world is changing across all aspects. So keep learning. So these are the three things I could think of.
Thank you so very much, Joseph. It has been such a wonderful conversation with you. And like the pixie dust that every fairy carries with her, which she just sprinkles to make sure there's magic along the trail, may you find that dust that you can sprinkle alongside everyone you meet on this earth, on the globe, and make a difference in their lives. God bless you all six of you. May Riafai find the fairy within to fly hard, create magic, and go wherever you want to go. All the very best in all that you're seeking to achieve.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Rashmi. I really enjoyed the conversation. It was very, I would say, a very honest kind of a conversation and very interesting questions. And it took me back to the entire journey. Thank you for that.
Pleasure completely mine, Joseph. With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. Come, let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.